This is Asked and Answered.
Questions.
With Tom Opferman and Steelers Digest editor Bob Labriola.
It was a bad result for the Steelers against the Browns on Sunday, and it resulted in offensive coordinator Matt Canada being relieved of his duties this morning, Tuesday morning, the week heading into Cincinnati. Labs, I was pretty shocked to find out the news. You were pretty shocked to find out the news. I think everybody in Pittsburgh was shocked to find out the news, simply because this is something the Steelers rarely do.
Yeah, I mean, very, very rarely. In fact, it has never happened going back before Chuck Noll was even hired.
Wow.
The last time the Steelers got involved in something even remotely resembling an interim coaching situation was 1965. That was during the Buddy Parker era. And Buddy Parker was, you know, while the Steelers had some moderate success during his time as the coach, you know, one of the things that he was notorious for was trading away future draft picks in bundles for veterans, many of whom were, you know, towards the end of their careers. And, you know, in fact, one of the picks that he traded away was used to draft that middle linebacker that the Bears had. What was his name? Oh, yeah, Dick Butkus.
Mm. Rings a bell.
So there was that. And then the other thing was, you know, Buddy Parker was known to fly into a rage after losses and cut and trade people on whims. So what had happened, late in the 1950s, in early 1960s, Art Rooney Sr. had turned to his oldest son, Dan, and kind of, I won't say turned over football operations to him, but gave him a much more significant role in managing the football operations of the franchise. And Dan Rooney was getting tired of, you know, losing all these draft picks. I mean, Buddy Parker would trade draft picks. There were years where the Steelers' first pick in the draft was the eighth or ninth round. So after talking to his dad, Dan Rooney went to Buddy Parker and said, okay, no more trading away draft picks or trading or cutting players unless you run it by us first. And Buddy Parker said something to the effect, I can't work like that. And Dan Rooney said, I accept your resignation. Hmm. Boom, he's gone right before the start of the 1965 season. So the Steelers at the time elevated Mike Nixon, who was an assistant coach on those Buddy Parker staffs, because, you know, there was nobody to hire. I mean, you know, they're all under contract and you don't have time. So anyway, they hire Mike Nixon. I think he went 2-12 or something like that. And that was his last season. And that was the last time that the Steelers ever did anything like that, because Dan Rooney's philosophy was you don't want to fire someone during the season or in a situation where you don't have time to conduct a search and replace the person, because you know, it can work out bad, as it did in the Nixon situation. Or if the guy is good, let's say he gets lucky and wins. Say instead of 2-12, they went, because there were 14-game seasons then. Instead of 2-12, say they went 7-7. Well, now you're under some pressure to keep the guy. Because, hey, look what he did.
Right.
And he might not be the best person long-term for that situation, and then you're stuck with somebody that you wouldn't have hired if you hadn't been backed into a corner. And that's not the way you want to hire someone for that kind of position. Okay, so that was the last time that happened. And that also, once Parker was done, there was no more trading of number one picks until Minka Fitzpatrick in 2019. Yes, 2019. because they traded their 2020
first
round pick to Minka. And I remember Art Rooney II saying about that later that that took a lot of thought and debate before that was approved. So, you know, the Steelers, you know, they don't do that. They don't hire interims and they don't trade future number one picks. Now we have a situation where there has been an exception to each one of those quote unquote rules. The first one, the Minka thing, worked out pretty good. You know, I'm not saying that, Mike Sullivan, excuse me, I just had a brain cramp there. Mike Sullivan or Eddie Faulkner is in line to be the offensive coordinator.
Those are who will be taking over duties, though, while Canada's gone, correct?
Yes, Mike Sullivan will be calling. This is according to internet reports.
Okay, yes.
Mike Garafolo. Right. Yeah, Mike Tomlin's, you mentioned we're doing this Tuesday morning. Mike Tomlin's news conference today will be in a couple of hours. So I'm sure we'll learn a lot more about it at that time. But internet reports are that Mike Sullivan will call plays from now on. He's the quarterback's coach. Eddie Faulkner is the running back's coach. He will serve as the interim offensive coordinator and handle the media responsibilities that come with that moving forward for the rest of this season. And then I'm sure there's going to be a pretty large search done after that to, you know, find a replacement.
But the news today, of course, Matt Canada relieved of his duties. We'll see what the offense looks like Sunday against the Bengals in their first time out post-Matt Canada. We got a ton of questions to get to today in Asked and Answered, and we start with Jason Norton from Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Are teams slash players allowed to drive to away games? I don't know how quickly an NFL team can get in and out of an airport, but for the average Steelers fan, it feels like driving would be quicker. Has anyone tested that theory?
You know, this is a pretty pertinent question, being that the Steelers played their annual game in Cleveland, you know, just last Sunday. And that is the place where the Steelers do not fly. They take buses to the game in Cleveland every season. During the early portion of the Chuck Knoll area, and it was only for a short period of time, the Steelers did travel by airplane to Cleveland as well. Now, Myron Cope, who was the radio color commentator at the time, he always speculated that that decision to fly was made because Cleveland Hopkins International Airport, which is where you would fly into, is located west of the city. And Chuck Knoll had a sister who lived close to that area. And Knoll would always arrange to have dinner with his sister during their road trip to Cleveland. So that made it easier for them to get together to do that. Now, you know, I don't know whether that's actual fact or just another entertaining Myron Cope story, but the Steelers rather quickly went back to bus trips to Cleveland. The team, that's how they got there this past weekend. They boarded buses at the end of the week for the game that was, the date was 2 days ago or 3 days ago, the 19th. Now, let me just say that there have been some modifications that have really helped the bus trips. You know, some buses leave from the Southside practice facility. Some buses, then they catch up with, there are some other buses that pick up and drop off in Cranberry for anyone who lives north of the city, because if you're going to Cleveland on the turnpike, that's where you would get on in Cranberry. So it's kind of a one flow, you know, thing. So it's easier, you know, depending upon where you live. A lot of coaches and players live north. They can take the, go to Cranberry, get on the buses there. It's a shorter trip, and then they're home quicker. Because back in the old days, when it was just buses leaving from the practice facility, you know, I would sit on the bus and would go past, you know, you get off in Cranberry, you come down 279, and I would look up and would pass my house, drive for another 35 minutes, and then get off the bus, and then get in my car and drive another 35 minutes back to my house. So, you know, it was nicer, you know, more convenient, let's say, once, you know, the, that additional little nuance was attached to the trip.
I'm sure you had some jealousy, some nostalgia this weekend when you were sitting at home and not boarding those buses to head to Cleveland. You missed it a lot.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. As I've said, the two best things I can experience in a moving vehicle, Cleveland in the rearview mirror and Latrobe in the rearview mirror. Because as much as I love training camp, after 21 days in the dorm, I'm ready to come home.
Yeah, you love the ending just a little bit more.
Yes.
Jeff Bankovich from Elizabeth Township, Pennsylvania. I know the game clock stops on an incomplete pass, penalty, injury, and timeout. When does the clock stop when the ball carrier runs out of bounds?
Okay, out of bounds stops the clock in the final 2 minutes of the first half and the final 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. I would say second half, but if the game goes into, you know, overtime, that's why I always say fourth quarter for the second half. And then outside of those windows, clock may stop briefly to give the officials time to spot the ball for the next play. But then if it's outside of the last 2 minutes of the first half, last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, then they wind it right away.
Dave Sevelane from Silver Spring, Maryland. Where is the biggest weakness along the offensive line? It sure looks like Kenny Pickett is facing a collapsing pocket on every pass play and that the running backs haven't had a lot of holes through which to run. How can this offensive line be improved now and in the offseason?
As for now, I think the insertion of Broderick Jones in at right tackle puts the five best offensive linemen currently on the roster on the field to start the game. Moving forward, you know, I'm not ripping Mason Cole, but if the question is how could it be improved, I think that if you look at the franchise history at that position, center, you know, you have a couple of two of the greatest maybe centers in modern era NFL to play, Mike Webster and Dermoni Dawson, both Hall of Famers. Marquise Pouncey, maybe he has a chance to be a Hall of Famer as well. He is a two-time first-team All-Pro, which if you're voted first-team All-Pro at center, that is a designation by definition as you're the best center in the NFL because there's only one center on the first-team All-Pro team. Ray Mansfield was another pretty good center. He's in the Steelers Hall of Honor as well. And when you look at those guys, you know, Dawson, Pouncey, they were athletic and strong, and they were able to do things, you know, pulling out in front of running backs, getting downfield on screens, and, you know, those kind of things that a lot of centers are unable to do. Plus, they were strong enough to hold the point in the middle of the field against, you know, the big nose tackles, Haloti Ngata, you know, those kind of people that are in there too. So if you're asking me where could they improve, I would look at that position and see if that could be upgraded moving forward.
Jeff Mayer from Fort Myers, Florida. It seems now that nearly every team that wins the toss defers and kicks off. Before this became an option, it seemed to me almost everyone chose to go on offense first. Why the shift in philosophy?
I'll give you my theory. I mean, I don't know this to be a fact, but this is my theory. It's kind of a reflection about how the NFL game is now. I mean, the games are so close. Often the outcome comes down to a couple of plays, few plays over the course of a game, and a lot of times those plays happen in the second half. So if you defer, instead of taking the ball first, you then get the opportunity to receive the second half kickoff. And I just think deferring early allows the coach or the team to maybe steal a possession in the second half, which is when so many of the games are won. And so I think that's kind of behind that decision.
Rick Jones from Cabot, Arkansas. How are players nominated for inclusion in the Pro Football Hall of Fame? I was looking at the long list of names and came across Joey Porter, James Ferrier, and James Harrison. Certainly all three men are among the greatest Steelers linebackers of all time, in my opinion. So I wondered first, what criteria is used to nominate someone, and who does the nominating? And who does the voting to whittle that number down to the final inductees?
Okay, I'm going to try and condense this as much as possible to answer Rick's question. Let's deal with the nominations first. And I got this right off the Pro Football Hall of Fame website. Any fan can nominate any player, coach, or contributor who has been connected with pro football, and all they have to do is write to the Pro Football Hall of Fame at 2121 George Halas Drive Northwest, Canton, Ohio, 44702. Okay, the only restrictions involved in these nominations is that a player or coach has to be retired at least 5 years before he can be considered. So, you know, if you want to nominate Willie Parker, if you want to nominate whoever.
You. I might write you in this summer.
No, I'm not.
You're not a contributor? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. So anyway, that's how nominations happen. Any fan can nominate anybody simply by sending it in to the address I just gave. Now, okay, the selection process. The Hall of Fame has a 50 individual selection committee. Okay, that's made up of one media representative from each pro football city. There's two from New York and two from Los Angeles because those cities have two teams. So that's 32 people. Then there's 17 at-large selections. They're active members of the media or individuals intricately involved in professional football. So that's 49. And then the 50th person is the president of the Pro Football Writers of America. That's 50. That is the Pro Football Hall of Fame Board of Selectors. Okay, now, they also refer to as the selection committee, those 50 people. Okay, now what happens is the selection committee gets an initial list of nominations by March 1st. Then they get another list of nominations in July, and a third list of nominations is sent in September. Okay, that compiles all of the eligibles because, you know, there could be some people nominated who may not have been out for 5 years yet. You know, people may not understand, you know, the nomination thing. So the Hall of Fame whittles down all of the people who are actually eligible, and then they send it along to the committee. Okay, then the committee whittles them down. So the first list, they take all of the nominations and they narrow it down to the top 25 plus ties. Okay, then the top 25 plus ties is whittled down to top 15 in November. And then the 16th, 17th, 18th, and 19th finalists are the candidates in the coach, contributor, senior committees. Those are separate committees, and those people nominate their finalists based on the rotation of whether it's a year for them or those categories or not. Okay, then the vote reduces 15 to 10. Then another vote reduces 10 to 5, and then it's a thumbs up, thumbs down situation to determine that year's class for induction.
Roger Schaffer from Plum, Pennsylvania asks, what is the role of the practice squad during the week, and who are their coaches?
The practice squad role, those guys do whatever everybody else does, all the other players. They go to the meetings, they go to practice, they eat in the same cafeteria, the same food. There's no practice squad menu. Same food in the cafeteria, same weight room access and or requirements, you know, the training staff, rehab, any of that stuff. You know, when I mean rehab, I'm not talking about, you know, injuries so much as I'm talking about body maintenance. You know, if you want to get in the hot pool or the cold tub or, you know, any of those things that players do to maintain their bodies. All of that that is available to the 53-man roster is available to the guys on the practice squad. And the coaches are the coaches. I mean, if you're an offensive lineman on the practice squad, the person who's coaching you is Pat Meyer, the same guy who's coaching the starters. So, yeah, there's no difference. So, yeah, that's why I think that when the Steelers are looking to replace someone who's injured, you know, or make a change or any of those in-season kind of things, they always look to their practice squad first because those guys have been around. They practice with the team. They meet with the team. So they're familiar with how things operate, the offense, the defense, whatever they might be, special teams. And not only are they familiar with the team, but the team is familiar with them. And so that's why on this particular, for this particular franchise, when Cole Holcomb and Quan Alexander, as two recent examples, guys who get injured and lost for the year, the first thing the Steelers did was look to the practice squad. And when they sign people from the outside at that point, usually they are signed to the practice squad so that then you get a little chance to see what kind of shape they're in. They get to relearn whatever might be new. Like in the case of Miles Jack,
right,
who signed
just gonna say that.
To the practice squad yesterday, he had been around the team, certainly, but I'm sure there have been differences or changes to some degree to maybe his position, the defense overall, so they can gauge, you know, he can relearn what he, or relearn or learn for the first time whatever he needs to know. They can see what kind of shape he's in. Before you, you know, add him to the actual 53-man roster.
Red Mahoney from Roosevelt, New York. Jaylen Warren looks extremely fast on the football field. What was his 40-time/shuttle time prior to the NFL draft, and why wasn't he drafted?
Jaylen Warren was timed at 4.55 in the 40-yard dash. This is during the his measurables or his testing leading up to that draft. So he ran a 4.55, and I don't know how much Red needs to know this, but he asked, so I'll tell him. He posted a 34.0 in the vertical, a 1.16 in the broad jump. You know, that's inches, not feet. He didn't jump 34 feet in the air. 1.16 in the broad jump, a 4.42 time in the shuttle, and a 7.13 time in the three-cone drill. Okay. If you're asking me why he wasn't drafted, again, I'm speculating here. Some of the things that I believe were working against Jaylen Warren were his size, physical size, 5'8", 215. And he only played one season at Oklahoma State. You know, he started out at Utah State, and, you know, Utah State doesn't get a lot of attention, pub. They're not playing a top schedule. So he was probably under the radar a little bit there. He had his one year at Oklahoma State. He did pretty good there, but it was 1 year. And then I read some of the pre-draft scouting reports from around the league, and he was characterized as, I'm going to quote here, a one-speed runner who lacked an extra gear with marginal elusiveness. He's a strong momentum runner, but he needs the hole to be there to hit top speed running downhill. So, in other words, what they're saying was he's just a guy. I'm translating. The Steelers, though, they saw things in Jaylen Warren that they liked. They aggressively pursued him as an undrafted free agent right after the draft. So, you know, good for the Steelers scouts and the guys who did the reports and, you know, for convincing Jaylen Warren to sign an unrestricted free agent contract with them. The Steelers are known around the league as giving those kinds of guys opportunity and have for a long time since Chuck Knoll was hired, and, you know, I think you could say they were right about going after Jaylen Warren at this point.
And our final question today comes from Tom Opperman, the co-host of the Asked and Answered podcast, and he wants to know, on the Labriola dinner table for Thanksgiving, does Bob Labriola mix corn in with his mashed potatoes, or is that considered blasphemy?
There is no corn.
There's no corn.
No, there is.
What kind of greens do we have? Are we just all greens into the dumpster?
There's usually some sort of broccoli.
Okay.
But no, there's no mixing with the mashed potatoes. Here's another thing that's, and me and Mike Pursuta always would argue about this.
Okay.
No ham.
Yeah, turkey, I'm with you. Is the, no ham either.
Yeah, I mean, and here's another thing. Thanksgiving is one of only two meals, holiday meals, that include no pasta.
What's the other holiday?
New Year's Day.
Wow. Okay.
Pork and sauerkraut, you know, is New Year's Day tradition.
I never thought of it like that, but you're right.
But everything else, you know, Christmas Day, Easter, Christmas Eve, all have some kind of pasta involved. And, you know, I can honestly say that, you know, I'm in favor of that. But I enjoy the, you know, the pasta-free holidays as well. But no, there's no mixing corn in with the mashed potatoes. My mother, God rest her soul, would have smacked me with a wooden spoon over the head if I had tried any of that.
See, so it would be considered blasphemy. And then pie. I mean, are you choosing one over the other, or is it an all of the above kind of thing?
I always pick one and I go big.
I like the way you think.
But there's the thing that there's three choices. There's pecan, pumpkin, and apple.
That's it, man. I mean, we're simpatico. We're in step as far as it comes with Thanksgiving, except for the corn and the potatoes. I don't know what it is about it. I just like a little corn in my mashed potatoes. Maybe your mother can come from beyond the grave and smack me in the back of the head with her wooden spoon.
I'd pay to see that.
Everybody enjoy the Thanksgiving holiday. Enjoy Steelers and Bengals at 1 o'clock on Sunday. Our coverage starts locally at 9 a.m. for that game. For Bob Labriola, I'm Tom Opferman. Thanks, as always, for listening to Asked and Answered.